force of nature sneaks upon man with great cat feet. Always waiting like some vast carnivore in the dark underbrush of existence, ready to leap and a pounce. That's a quote from the current fall and winter catalog of the Sears Roebuck Company. Very nice. It's an interesting description of the yard goods department. By George, he's literary. Bring it up there. Oh, we're living in days of advancing showbiz, I'll tell you. I'm walking along 7th Avenue the other day, down in the 20s, and I come across this, you know, I'm just walking along amid all the junk and trucks and cigar butts and beer cans. It's, you know, the typical effluvia of fun city. And, by the way, you know, everybody talks about ecology, and, you know, it's always related to the atmosphere, but is a stupidity loudly expressed a form of polluting the atmosphere? Of course, that's philosophical pollution, but one man's stupidity is another man's vast, all-sweeping concept. So, you know, you're six of one, half dozen the other. So I'm walking along 7th Avenue amid the cigar butts and the beer cans and all the jazz of Fun City when all of a sudden I see, you know, there's a thousand little cruddy places, you know, places along there where they make keys instantly while you wait. Pressing and all kinds of little, you know, type joints up and down the street there. And here is a place which, for the purposes of argument, we will call Harry's Bar and Grill. It's a little tiny joint, see. And this is exactly what it is at Harry's Bar and Grill, starring Dorothy on the hot plate and grill from 11 till 2 will perform your requests. But, gee, you know, there's a star short order cook. Now, I wonder when Dorothy comes on, is a great burst of applause when Dorothy picks up her spatula and she's getting ready, you know, to make the first cheeseburger. You know, when the chief hollers back, "Hey, Dorothy, cheeseburger on right! Holy onions!" The crowd is a vast crowd. Ah, yes, friends, fellow sufferers. All together now, let's sing it out loud and clear. Let's sing it out for Dorothy, another star emerging in the vast firmament of showbiz personalities of our time. Great performers. Thank you, Matt. Hold it there. Don't reset it. Just let it right there. That's an important point. Right there. Right. It's an important point where the contraltos come in. It's an important literary allusion. By the way, speaking of literary allusions, we have a salute here tonight. Every year at this time, as part of our vast, all-encompassing, deeply concerned public service broadcasting, we bring you straws in the wind that relate to Christmas gift suggestions for the forthcoming, you know, Christmas is coming up. How many days are there to Christmas anyway? Have you figured it out? You haven't. Some people are afraid of the inevitable, and so they pretend it's not going to happen by not counting the days. Other people can hardly wait for the inevitable, so they constantly count the days. Hey, what connection is it that banks have with, I'm just asking a philosophical question. What is the connection that banks have with Christmas? Every time you go into a bank now, they have Christmas leaves and, you know, wreaths and all that stuff. And here it is, you know, it's months before. And maybe there's a connection. I don't want to bring it up, but maybe there is. Speaking of the inscrutable, some nights, maybe 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, I wake up, you know, tossing, fevered in the darkness, contemplating my navel. And I think, you know, how many people call us a sick society. I think about that, see. And then the obvious question pops up into my mind, name one that ain't. I mean, if you define it safe. As a matter of fact, you remember Nancy Mitford, who wrote the thing about American funerals, you call that? Well, listen, if she thinks that's something, how many of you remember recently the unbelievable funeral that Nasser had? I mean, no mortician could dream up anything like that. I want to tell you. Well, you know, it's all part of the whole kit and caboodle. But tonight, for those of you who would like to, seriously contemplate what you'd like to give your friends for Christmas, I have received in the mail a catalog from a mail-order Christmas place, you know, where they send these. You get these. You get these in the mail, man? Well, I kind of like this one. Little suggestion. It says, phony credit card case. Just the thing for the funster in your crowd. 10 gag, beautifully printed, engraved, worthless credit cards. Good for nothing, but a good laugh. They all come in a plastic credit card case, which can be used for the real thing if desired. Try using one of these phony credit cards on your favorite waitress and see what reactions you'll get. Well, now, that's a vaguely and very, very sneaky, almost a camouflaged ad for. You realize, of course, today that one of the big businesses is the counterfeit credit card. You know that, don't you? Well, I just, so I think it is. I said, oh, boy, what a great Christmas suggestion. Here's another Christmas suggestion you might like. I enjoyed this one. For those of you who are, you know, people who enjoy beauty. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who dig art and beauty. It says, antique bathroom miniatures. Old-fashioned counterparts of today's modern bathroom fittings. You can buy a complete little miniature John. Beautifully done reproductions are in shiny white porcelain with metal details like faucets on sink and bathtub and pull chain on water closet. You know the old expression, pull a chain. Toilet with overhead tank is 1.5 by 2 by 5 5/8 high. Sink is etc. It says a beautiful miniature of a well-loved set of appliances. Makes an ideal Christmas gift. Well, now, it depends on who you're giving it to. I mean, that could be taken as a hell of a comment by somebody. You know, he opens it up and he says, oh, you know, just what I always wanted. And there's a beautiful little John. And it's quite nice. There it is. It really is. It's a tiny John. You could, and they're accurate. You know, remember when people used to buy models of cars? You know, when model making was cars and it was airplanes and little races. Now you can make, you know, models of Johns. You can make a model of, you know, various utilitarian things, of which I will leave some to your imagination, in our society. Great for the collector. And also here it says, candle making set, the wonderful hobby for all. Set comes with wick holder, 6 tube metal candle mold, braided wick, and various scents can be used to create your own candles. This is including marijuana, various other types of wonderful scents. Can you imagine? No, I'm just a new hobby. It says winemaking. It says a wonderful new hobby, which is sweeping the nation, is to make your own wine. And you get a complete set of winemaking equipment. You get your own little... By the way, whatever happened to that little old dirty winemaker? Now, but this is little winemaker me. Remember him? He was so great. I liked him. Maybe, you know, that lascivious look he had in the eye when he was down there tapping... You know, with the bung starter, all those big barrels. Remember the great scenes when he'd have down there, those bucolic Lolita scenes with those nymphs? Incidentally, speaking of yes, indeed, yes. Speaking of nymphs and bucolic scenes, I have here, I thought you'd like to keep up with the latest in products, since we're all, well, after all, we're a product-oriented society. And what society isn't? Everybody digs products of one another. Have you noticed the new trend in products? Naming them provocatively. And I quote here Car and Driver. I'll just let them take over so you don't get mad at me. It's called Porno Products, which is their heading. It says, the thought processes involved in arriving at product names far transcend the bounds of everyday platonic logic. But a new treatment from Union Carbide, a new oil treatment from Union Carbide called Stud, is too damn much. It may very well, quote, turn your horses loose, as they say in their ad. and it probably does reduce oil consumption, etc. But the logic behind naming a plastic bottle of zinc dithiophosphate stud is bulbous and blatantly un-American. Most pornographic images despoil our most cherished... Must they despoil our most cherished cornerstone? Will stud, we ask, editorially be followed by nympho gas treatment? Or... I could just see, push over, the new instant low-price gas. Oh, sure, if he is stud, it's a sub... I can't read the rest of it. Because they get very graphic, and then it's got to come. It's literally got to come. I just wonder why cars have been in the name of cars. Naming of cars, by the way, is very important, very very important. And all cars now have a sort of they've slightly changed. See, at one time cars were named after mythological characters. For example, the Buick Electra was a classic example of a mythologically named automobile, the Buick Electra. They even had, like, Zephyr. Remember when they used to name cars after Greek gods and so forth? They didn't get around to Oedipus, but they might just as well have done it. But then they began to change, and now almost every car is named after an animal of some kind or other. The Pinto, the Maverick, these are all animals, you see. The Mustang, the Jaguar. They're all named after animals. But you notice they're all named after a certain type of animal. You rarely see one called the Buick Squirrel, or the Plymouth Turtle. certain animals are exciting, others are dull, see. And you can make a terrible mistake by misnaming your car. I think one of the great boo-boos, of course, was the name of the Edsel. Who can get excited over a car named Edsel? Edsel reminds me of a little short, fat guy that sweats, and he wears thick glasses. In what's your car named after Howard, or Marty. I'm driving the new 1971 Howie. Forget it. Speaking of bad names, this is W-O-R. And you know what surprises me about that name, W-O-R, that's our name, is how many people misspell it. They add extra letters all the time. W-O-R is not spelled, friends, except W-O-R. Don't put any extra letters in there. Some people put two or three extra, usually two. There's no E in W-O-R. That's right. There's not one of the, I'm not even going to say the other letter because immediately everybody goes, ha, 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 and they'll write it down that way. No, I'm not going to start that business. I'm not. We're located in Fun City, Punxsutawney County, Pennsylvania, and we'll be here for a while, I guess, until they catch up with us. But, you talk about naming products, I'll tell you. I just wonder how many of us are the product of our own name. You know, we're named before we even have any way to fight it. And I just, I got a letter the other day from Lear. Remember I mentioned on the show here a couple of months ago that Bill Lear, the guy that designed the jet, William Lear, named his daughter Shanda? Now, think about that for a minute. And I said, this shows a rather sneaky sense of humor. And Shanda, at the point, when she was, 3 hours old, was not able to fight about this. And so what happened? Well, I did this on the air. I just threw it out like that, see? That's all. I just went in passing. About 2 weeks later, I get a long letter from Bill Lear. I never met Bill Lear, and he goes on. And a big, long letter. He's very sensitive about this, apparently. And he writes this long letter telling me that his daughter Shanda indeed likes her name, and furthermore, she asked him one day if she could get it copyrighted. No, I mean, like a brand name. So I don't know. have you ever thought of copywriting your name? I mean, so that you're the one and only Ocular of 2732 and a half Grand Concourse, and nobody can use your name in any other way, shape, or form. Well, now, at what point does a man's name belong to him? I mean, does it belong to you, really? Is a name, really, in a very real sense, is a kind of a... It's an abstraction. It's just a name. Radish. What does radish mean? I mean, when I say radish, you think of a radish. But at no point is there a paper, like a birth certificate, that says radish is called radish. You know, have you ever thought about that? How guys, how these words that we use were evolved? I mean, you know, you can just see this, these two guys. You know, one time there was no language at all. See, man didn't spring out of the antediluvian mud doing Times crossword puzzles. It did not work that way. And so in the very earliest days, you know, I have a sneaking suspicion what the first word was. What would you think would be the first word? It must have been a first word when you think about it, you know. Had to be a first moment. And of course, maybe I'm more concerned with names than most. I mean, the average guy named, John or Clarence or Henry. Hey, he takes that name just like you take doorknob, window, a sand, bird, rock. He never questions the fact that the word bird is a funny word. The sound of it is funny. If you didn't know what bird meant, you'd probably laugh. You know, somebody said, bird. That's a funny sound. So maybe I'm more concerned with the name because, you know, my name is J-E-A-N. Whether you like it or not, dear listener, it is J-E-A-N. I received a letter the other day from somebody who says, Dear Mr. Shepherd, have you thought of anglicizing your name? What do you mean, anglicizing my name? What does this mean? My name is J-E-A-N. Have you ever thought of anglicizing Clarence? I mean, how can we decide what's anglicized and what isn't? Anyway, my name is J-E-A-N, so it's quite obvious, you know, that it's my real name. That's the end of it, J-E-A-N. So from the very beginning, I'm like in the first time it happened was in Miss Mino's class. I had a teacher named Miss Mino. And what a great name for a teacher. And, you know, it sounds like, Miss Mino. And so she was, too. And so I'm sitting in class there one day, like the second day I'm in this first grade class, Miss Mino. And so she's reading out the roll. You know how teachers read out the roll there, see? And so she suddenly comes to this name. She says, Eugene. I'm sitting there, you know, I'm scratching, looking around. I look over at Schwartz, and he's sitting scratching. You know, nobody ever made any mistake with Schwartz. So she says, Eugene. Will Eugene please raise his hand? Would Eugene please raise his hand? I'm sitting there looking at Schwartz. And then all of a sudden, Doppler, who was sitting a couple of desks away from me, Hey, Shepherd, she means you. I said, who, me? Yeah. She's looking right at you. Huh? I look up, and here's this old doll who looked like a pile of crab apples with feet. Here's this old doll looking right at me. She says, Eugene, would you please raise your hand when I call the roll, please? Well, I had a choice. Either go with it or object. No matter where man begins in life, he has these choices. There are those who will go with everything, and then there are the others. And I might add, the ones that go with everything generally wind up, you know, big cheeses. Because then they wind up not only going with everything, but creating the thing that everybody has to go with. So, which is an interesting process. So I'm sitting in the crowd way in the back. Of course, I'm in the alphabetical ghetto right away. You know, you understand that since my name begins with S, everybody's seated alphabetically. I'm so far back, I could not even see the board. It was sort of a black, hazy mist up there. And out of that crowd, I could hear, please, Eugene, raise your hand. So with that, I said, oh, my name is Gene. Gene. She said, I will refuse to use nicknames in this class. Now, I don't care what your friends call you out on the playground. Your name in this class is Eugene. I said, no, my name is Gene. I said, I will not use nicknames in this class. Your name is Eugene. Well, remember, I'm in first grade. Miss Mino is the Spiro Agnew of the Warren G. Harding School. You don't get up with any smart talk in her face. So, you know, you're going to get shouted down. So I just sat there. I figured it would pass. So the next day, we go through the same routine with the reading of the roll. And this time I'm a little bit alert, see? And so she comes to this, Eugene? Again, I've got this miserable decision to make. Do I go along with it? So I, you know, being a kid, I'm called Gene. My name is Gene, see? So I automatically, I didn't say yes. I just sat there for a minute. She's Eugene, with a note of irritation. So I put my hand up. That was the first sellout. How many of you can honestly look me right in the loudspeaker, friends, look me right in the voice coil, and can remember the first moment you sold out a cherished principle? Well, I didn't, nobody does. I didn't recognize it as a sellout. I just recognized it. I don't want to hear any yelling, see? So I said, here. And she goes on to the next name. Well, the next day, it started all over again. You see, the point I'm making here, friends, is once you're compromised, you're never through compromising. So the next day, she's reading the role, and she comes to Eugene. At this point, I'm getting like, you know, Pavlov's dog. She goes, Eugene, up goes my hand. And she goes on to the next names. Everything is cool now, see? So about on the fifth day, after I'm answering this thing all the time, I'm now like Pavlov's dog, see? I immediately recognize the fact that there is going to be a name called in this role, and it's Eugene. I don't know who the hell Eugene is, but somehow it's tangled up with me, and so I better raise my hand. So I'll close my hand. Well, about 5 or 6 days later, Miss Mino is up at the board, and she's talking away. You know, how teachers talk. She's talking away there about whatever the hell it was, you know. Who knows? And now she's asking questions. Eugene? Well, I don't relate Eugene to the scene. I relate it to the roll-calling scene, see? So I'm sitting there with my mouth hanging open, watching some dead fly hanging out to the light cord or something in the closet. Eugene, I'm asking you a question. Will you please pay attention when I'm reading? We cannot have people just letting their attention shift when we're doing things in class. Now, when I ask a question, I want you to answer it. Now, would you please tell us what you're... Well, so there I am now. I'm officially Eugene. Well, this continued for about 6 weeks. Now, I don't know why I'm telling you this story, except to say this is how I got very involved with names. So this continued for about 6 weeks, like, you know, in first grade. First time it's ever happened. And now I'm totally immersed in the world of this mythical Eugene. And so, and of course, nobody else called me. That's Schwartz, Flick, Brunner. Nobody else called me Eugene. I was Eugene to Miss Mino. That was the end of it. And it's interesting how your mind will accept a thing like that. How, say, if you're in the Army for 6 or 7, let's say a year, 6 or 7 months, a year, and you get a rank. You're in the Army, Matt. You get a rank, okay? And you become a corporal. Well, somehow your idea, your mind accepts that as your name now. And so some guy says, corporal... You say, yeah, you know. You begin to see yourself in different lights, different identities for different situations. And they may have nothing to do with the situation of your real life, and you accept them totally. And so I am sitting in class, 6 weeks go by, and we are having a PTA penny supper. Now, you know what is it, a PTA penny supper? Have you ever heard of a PTA penny supper? Well, a PTA penny supper is a pure... I'd have to put it in the class of American folk customs. I don't think they have PTA penny suppers in Sardinia. I have never heard of a PTA penny supper in, say, Jos, Nigeria. And I was in Jos, Nigeria. I never heard of that. And so the PTA really is an American thing. And, you know, the whole shtick of the mothers getting involved and coming to these meetings and the entertainment and the parties and all that jazz. And so the PTA has a penny supper. Now, the penny supper... It can be an embarrassing thing, but the day that the penny supper was organized, we all got a note. You remember when you used to take notes home from school? It was a note, you know, it was a mimeograph note, and give this to your mother. So I got this note. And somehow the idea, you know, of being a human being who is so incapable of thought or concepts or anything, that you have to take a note to your mother. I wonder how many bosses have often thought, you know, he's got some idiotic guy in his sales force, And he says, here, Bob Alden, would you take this note home to your wife? But that, nevertheless, we got this note, see, and it says, of course, at that time, I was totally uninterested in notes that they gave you that were mimeographed, so I stuck it in my corduroy knickers and took it home. And that night, my mother's going through my pants, as she always did, you know, dumping out all the junk, and she comes across this note. She says, what's this? And she reads it, and it turns out to be a note that says, we are having a penny supper next Wednesday night. At which point all the parents and the, you know, the mothers and fathers and the kids and all that can come to school, and every parent is expected to, or if they can, will contribute to the penny supper their favorite dish. You know, like if your family lives on tuna salad, your mother contributes a dish of tuna salad. Or, you know, see, we happen to be in a meatloaf family, and my mother, you know, is a magnificent meatloaf creator. She, her art form was the meatloaf, and it's a simple, humble art form. But let me say this, you know, how many times have you heard Julia Childs? You know, Julia Childs, to me, Julia Childs is the W.C. Fields of the kitchen. You know, she's always saying things like, well, you can always tell a good cook by how they fix scrambled eggs. You know, this is one of those cliches that people always take as if it's true. Let me tell you, friends, we had a mess sergeant who could cook scrambled eggs near heaven. Let him try French toast, and it came out like it was rubber cooked in kerosene. So, you know, these cliches, you know. But anyway, Julia Childs always says, if you can cook an egg, you can cook anything. Bunk. That is not true. I disagree. But nevertheless, people believe it. And so my mother, you know, we live in a meatloaf culture, and the test of a really good chef was how well they handled chopped chuck steak, how well they handled, you know, 79 cents a pound hamburger and what they could do with it. So my mother contributes one of her great meatloaves, which is a fantastic meatloaf. It was the holiday meatloaf. She had, you know, workaday meatloaves, which are plain. The holiday meatloaf had tomato sauce on the top of it, and she used to put three or four sliced canned mushrooms over it. So we'd take the meatloaf then. And that day, the penny supper, little did I thought it was going to be fun. See, little did I realize that this penny supper was to be my first exercise in confrontation. You know how most people today accept confrontation as a normal thing? Now, confrontation really simply means, go to hell. You know, that's confrontation. And in our society, which is basically, you know, democratically oriented, we don't really get that honest. Often. It may not, may be good. I don't know. I'm just saying that we rarely do. For example, if now the boss comes down and he's talking to Matt, who's my engineer tonight. He, you know, he comes down. He doesn't say to Matt. He says, Matt, if you got time, Matt, would you go and copy them tapes over in Studio D, will you, Matt? That's the way it's done, see? The boss doesn't confront Matt. Get off your dump and copy them tapes, you slug! That's confrontation. At which point, Matt has the choice of either getting off his duff and copying the tapes quick, or else he then counter-confronts, which is, go to hell! Now you have a standoff. Now you have the standoff of confrontation. Now, ultimately, one or the other side is going to have to give, depending on... Well, of course, what who gives is the one with the most clout is the one that doesn't give. So, here I am. And my life in school, now, as you know, any of you kids who are listening, you know that the life you live in school is a secret, separate life that rarely is transmitted to home. How can you? It's a very secret life. It's just like, guys, now I'm going to say something right now at this point that relates to other parts of life. Now, a guy goes to the office. I'm sure a lot of you are listening, seeing you got, you know, wives and husbands. And every day, Big Fred gets into his Plymouth Fury at 7:10, and he drives to the station at the Montclair station, and he gets on the train, or he drives to the Westport station, and he goes to the train. Now, he goes to this mysterious thing called the office. He goes to the office. Now, there is no way for Fred to tell his wife, Myrtle, what life is like at the office. Correct, Matt? I mean, it's this thing, you know. Have you ever tried to explain to people close to you what it's like in master control hour after hour? Ralph Schlegel comes in hour after hour. This goes on, you know. It's the whole zeitgeist of this place, which we know totally. No way to describe it to those who are outside. No way. So people will ask me, you know, they'll come up innocently. They'll say, well, what does it feel like to do a radio program and to perform in college and all that stuff? No way for me to tell them that. It's a secret, private thing. Secret in the sense that it's your thing. You can't tell others. It's just like the black experience. There's no way for a black person to transmit to a white person what it's like to be black. But that works both ways. There is no way for a white to transmit to a black what it's like to be white. They're secret and private experiences. And so... So the school thing is that way. So I had separated it already in my mind. You go to school, that's it. And so every day I would come home from school, and my mother would say, how was school today? How are you going to answer that? She'd say, how was school today? You go, eh? And then you open up the refrigerator, and you make yourself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and you go potting out, you know, out to your thing. You go out and play ball or something. But that question, how was school today? Boy, so once in a while you'd say, rotten. So, well, what happened? It's rotten. You can't really say why. You may make a specific thing, like I got, you know, I flunked an algebra exam. But that's specific. That's not school. That's you flunking an exam. And so the whole round oeuvre, The life of school. I had separated school, okay? All right. The night of the penny supper, I'm all excited. Everybody's excited. My mother's taking this meatloaf scene. She's got it in a casserole, one of these Pyrex casseroles with a cloth over the top, and we get in the car, and the old man... Oh, I guess I learned my anti-PTA stuff from my old man. Did he hate the PTA? Oh, boy! He would sit in the car... And he was like, you know, he was like a sore pimple about to burst because he's been drafted into this ridiculous thing. And he's sitting in the front seat. See, what he wanted to do was to go down to the bowling alley with Zudok and Gertz or something like that. But here he is sitting in the front seat of the Oldsmobile with the kids in the back, and he's on his way to this idiotic penny supper. Now that I think back on it, I hate to tell you this, but my old man was a very early hippie. I'm serious. Now that I look back on it, He, you know, was not codified. He didn't have a formula or anything like that. But he literally was an early hippie. And he had it all going that way. See, so he's sitting in the front seat. In later events, it proved that he really was. And so he's sitting on the front seat, and we're on the way to the penny supper. And the old man turns on the radio in the car. We had this radio. It was a kind of car radio that the dial was attached to the car... The steering column, you know, that kind of radio that was attached to the steering column. It actually had chains, not chains, but cables that went down into the radio. You've seen those old radios, you know. So anyway, he had this thing going, and the radio comes on, and he's listening to the radio, turned up real loud. And my mother is talking to him. I remember she's saying something to him about the penny supper and what he's supposed to do, what he's not supposed to do, and who he's not supposed to say bad stuff to and all that. And he's got the radio turned up real loud, and the sports announcer's eyes. And in sports today, the Chicago White Sox announced the trade of the whole damn team. They figure next year they're going to have to start all over new again. You know that? And all of a sudden, my mother says, "Are you listening to me?" And he says, "Shut up! I'm trying to hear what they're saying about the White Sox and a big trade." And she turns to him and she says, "Well, you're going to have to listen because we're almost there now." And he says, "All right, damn it!" He turns the radio off. "Well, what do you want?" And then she won't talk. She just sits there with the meatloaf. Like, you know, all right, if you're going to be rotten, I'm not going to say anything to you. So in we go to the Warren G. Harding School. On that note, okay? So we go into the Warren G. Harding School. I'm about to have a cataclysmic moment of total and true education. And there's thousands of people. You know, all these kids that I had always seen in class, I had never seen their mothers and fathers, just a few of them, like Schwartz and Flick and that, you know. But here are all these strange-looking mothers and fathers walking around the whole place filled with them, see. And in each class, we were supposed to go to our own classroom. We were instructed to go. So I take my mother and father down to Miss Mino's class, first grade, you know, the whole shtick, and Schwartz is there and Flick and all of them. We get out of Miss Mino's class, and there's Miss Mino, who was dressed very differently than I'd ever seen her. Usually she wore this dress that looked a little bit like purple sandpaper or something. It was a strange-looking dress, which she wore every day in class. And she had this peculiar-looking sort of orange hair with rimless glasses. And tonight, she's wearing a totally different thing. It looks very different somehow at night. I'm not used to seeing school at night. And it's dark out, and the lights are all on. And Miss Mino has got the makeup on and all that stuff. And she's sitting up at the front of the class there. And all the kids are milling around. And they've set up, like, tables that were brought up from the gym on sawhorses. And on all these tables was all the stuff that the parents had made, like macaroni and cheese salad. you know, that was to eat, see. Like homemade bread, like a Parker House roll. There were at least 17,000 gallons, at least, of ham salad. I remember all kinds of ham salad. They didn't make a lot of... So my mother's meatloaf goes in there, and there was sort of a grayish-purple pumpkin pie that looked like it was made out of, you know, old used tomatoes or something. So here's all that stuff all sitting there, and you were supposed to pay to the kids who were running the stands. See, all of us were supposed to get behind the stands there. You paid a penny a portion. That's why they called it a penny supper. And the money was to go to buy new hairpins or something from Miss Mino. But anyway, we were all milling around. Everybody's happy. And the old man comes walking in, see, in his seat. At that, he's looking around. Now, there are certain men who dig that stuff. Now, it's been a source of complete fascination with me that there are men who dig the suburban scene. They like the idea of having a lawn to mow. They like the idea of having a trellis with junk growing on it. This is a very important thing with them. They like to have a big basement and all this stuff. In other words, a big establishment. Well, my old man had one line for that. Yeah. In fact, we rented houses all the time when I was a kid. We never owned a house. We always rented a house. And my mother, being a true nesting person, see, mothers generally are the other way. They like that, you know, the idea of a nest and a place and it's established and all that. And my mother would once in a while make a comment when rent came around, rent day, see. She would say, you know, with all the rent we're spending, we could own this house. And the old man would sit there. See, the one thing he didn't want was to own a house, because that's a real commitment, you know. Then you got to live in this hellhole all your life, see. With that, he'd just say nothing, see. And then she would repeat it. She'd say, you know, sometimes I just wonder why we don't just take this money and put it in on our own house. Then he'd throw his fork down. I don't want to own a house. That was confrontation again. There's no answer. The old man didn't want to own a house. My mother did want to own a house. Ain't no halfway between, friends. It's like pregnancy. Either you own a house, you don't. The end of it. So he comes into this PTA world. And here's all these fathers. And now they look like fathers. There's a certain kind of fathers who, at the age of 23 and have a kid, already look settled and stolid. You know the kind? They look vaguely gray. And you can just imagine them, you know, they've got gray jockey shorts, and they're fathers, they're parents. The word parent is almost like a nationality, like Greek or Dutch. They're parents. And so here were all these people around that were parents. Now, they were parents of kids like me, the same age, but they all looked infinitely older than my old man. My old man, who looked sneaky, see, and was a fantastic pool player. He loved to take the pan off of his holes and all that stuff. See, he and Gertz used to get out and race their Pontiacs and holes down on Kennedy Avenue. And it was totally, totally alien situation. And he's walking around looking kind of bug. And I'm very proud. You know, that's my dad. That's my mother. You know, and I'm standing back there. And I was put on a big dish that I was ladling out. I was ladling out a dish of macaroni and cheese salad, see. So people come over and buy them. I put them on. And it was at Halloween time, by the way, because we had plates, paper plates made like pumpkins. I remember this. So I'm laying this stuff out, and I take the penny, and And I'm really having a lot of business, see? And I see my mother. Secretly, I'm very proud because my mother's meatloaf went like Billy be damned. They really dug the meatloaf, see? And so I'm way back there. And so the old man is drifting around, and I notice Miss Mino is walking from person to person. Say, I'm Miss Mino. And, you're little Bobby's mother and father. Well, I'd like to certainly meet little Bobby's mother and father. With that, Miss Mino comes up to the old man. See, he's standing there looking at the pickles, you know, looking kind of bugged. And she comes up and says, hello, I'm Miss Mino, and I'm little Eugene's teacher. The old man looks at her and says, who? Miss Mino, you what? He says, well, I'm the teacher of this class, and I'm little Eugene's teacher. He says, you're whose teacher? Little Eugene. He says, who's that? He says, well, that's your son. My son? What do you mean, Eugene? His name is Gene, just like my name. My name is Gene, you hear that? It ain't Eugene.
Oh, she said, well, we don't use nicknames in the class, you see. And I prefer to use their regular given name in class. His name is Eugene, of course.
My name is Gene, J-E-A-N.
Oh, well, if I'm pleased to meet you.
And she hurriedly scuttled out into the next room. And the old man walked around for about 10 seconds, and he finally goes up to my mother, and he says, I'm going to the bowling alley. Bye. And he's gone. And there we are, surrounded by real parents. That moment of confrontation. And from that day on, in 1B, I was always Gene. But Miss Mino would look up. Every time she would call out the name, you know, she would look up from her list and she'd say, Gene, with undisguised animosity. She never accepted it. And so I disagreed with Shakespeare. What is in a name? A rose is any other. No, no, friend. If we had...
The following...